The views expressed in the following podcast are not necessarily the views of the United States Air Force or the Air Force Reserve, but rather the perspectives of the individual speakers. No endorsement of any particular person, business, or interest is ever intended.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our latest episode of Ready, Set, Airlift. I'm your host, Julian Hernandez. September is Leukemia and Lymphoma Awareness Month. For one member of the 433rd Security Forces Squadron, that has taken on a new meaning after finding herself fighting against this type of cancer. She shared her story with us, and it offers some powerful lessons in resiliency, perseverance, and determination. Senior Master Sergeant Catherine Falcone, Superintendent of the 433rd Security Forces Squadron, thank you so much for joining me today on Ready, Set, Airlift, ma'am. I think our listeners are going to find that your story here is going to be very compelling, but I always like to start my conversations with kind of an easy segue into the topic, which is, why'd you join the Air Force?
When I was 12 years old, I began to fully understand what the military was through my grandfather. He was Air Force Security Forces. At the time, he was called Air Police, which is what our career field used to be. And I began to see his legacy in everything that he did. And I looked at both my Nana and my Papa at 12 years old. And I said, I'm going in the Air Force, and that is the job I'm going to do. And I stuck with it. When I was 18 years old, right after I graduated, I went to sign up in delayed enlistment.
That's awesome. And security forces sometimes, from my understanding, is something that people end up in rather than choose to go in. So for you, having that family legacy, that connection to it, is pretty amazing, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's very dear to my heart. And when my grandfather passed away, I had the opportunity to see lots of pictures of him standing guard mount and doing open ranks, and seeing that we still do those same things today in the same career field. It means a lot to me.
By the way, you said open ranks, and it triggered a thought from a conversation we were having today in the office. It sounds like those are making a comeback.
I would love to see that. So the 433rd Security Forces, we do open ranks almost every single UTA. Our chief or our op soup, typically a senior NCO. We are on a deployment right now, so whoever's available will go and inspect uniforms. We do blues once a year. So we have, those are not lost on us. We still keep those same basic fundamentals. And it helps. It really helps with good order and discipline.
Yeah, the Air Combat Command commander was in the military headlines recently for that same position of, hey, we got to get back to these fundamentals, these basics, like open ranks inspections. But, you know, back to your journey, right? So you started out on active duty, right?
I did. I started back in active duty almost 21 years ago, 2003, September 30th of 2003, I joined, and out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And my first base was Hawaii. I had my first child there. He's almost 20 now. And I did 4 years there and then came over here and did 4.5. And I had a small little extension and ended up getting out. I had a couple deployments, both Afghanistan and Iraq. But when I got back from Iraq, I was told that my grandmother, who was my family care plan at the time, had been diagnosed with cancer. And active duty side was going to send me right back to Afghanistan. So I had to make that tough decision to get out and transition. I'd heard a lot about the reserves. I'd heard a lot about the flexibility. I was raised by the Guard and Reserve, I like to say. When I was in Hawaii, the Guard and the Reserve was very much, they were on orders. They were in leadership positions, and they just constantly told us about the camaraderie and the family aspect of the reserves. And I always knew that it was going to be an option for me. I just didn't know when. And when that opportunity presented itself, we'll call it an opportunity, in my grandmother's unfortunate times, I transitioned into the reserves, and I don't regret it. From the moment I joined, I was really a part of a community. I've been at this base. I'm very thankful for my active duty career, but I was not taken care of like I have been in the reserves. As I was transitioning out, I was going to request to my leadership if I could get extended just 1 year, to not deploy. Let's see what happens with my grandmother. And then I can deploy. But they told me that wasn't an option for me. But when I got into the reserves, I was really taken care of. I lost my grandmother. My sister got cancer. I lost her. My brother got sick and I lost him. And those were all my siblings. And for every step of everything that I've been through, the reserves has always had my back. So I couldn't be more thankful for that.
I do want to say, of course, my condolences. I lost my mom to cancer a few years ago. And so, you know, we all have different paths of working through our grief. But I understand at least a little bit that feelings. And cancer would turn out to be a challenge to your service in more ways than you probably would have imagined in that moment. Tell us a little bit about when you started to notice maybe your own health was not where you wanted it to be.
So it was actually September of last year. I was at actually the peak of my health. I was working out 5 days a week. I was doing cardio. I was actually doing sprints on Thursday. My doctor and I later laughed about that, and I'll get into that. But I would do sprints on Thursday. And I noticed over time that although I was doing more sprints and I was working out more, that my cardio, my endurance, and my ability to sprint for longer periods of time and as fast was decreasing. I remember telling one of my coworkers as I was walking up the stairs, I'm just so out of breath. This makes no sense. And in September, I went TDY. It was my second consecutive TDY. I caught COVID and I had this cough that I could not recover from. So I was no longer unwell, but it was a cough that would not go away and a little bit of wheezing. So in October, I went TDY. And upon my return, I spoke to my sweet aunt and she said, you need to go to the ER just to make sure you don't have walking pneumonia or something like that. So I went to the ER and they did a chest x-ray and the ER physician comes into my room and said, hey, you don't have pneumonia, but you have a mass in your chest and it's the size of, at the time he thought it was a softball. And they did a CT with and without contrast and confirmed that it was that. And that right there shook me. That moment was the moment of the most uncertainty that I think I've ever felt. And I knew that it wasn't good. I just didn't know what it was. But I was able to see what the military had to offer for healthcare at that point, and it was amazing. I went to my primary care doctor, was immediately sent to specialists. A pulmonologist, Dr. Warren, wonderful man. He did a biopsy through my chest, came back, said, hey, we need to do another biopsy. So here I am, freaking out, have no idea what's going on. They want to do another biopsy. I have this imagination that was making me think, oh, I may drop dead any second, that no one knows what this is. It's a little dramatic. My oncologist will be listening to this and will probably say I'm a little dramatic. So I went in for my biopsy. They were going to be putting me to sleep for this one. But right before they took me back, he came into the room and my family was in the room. And Dr. Warren told me with his boss sitting there, he said, you have cancer. And at first they thought it was non-Hodgkin's. My results were still at the lab and that was the preliminary. And I was speechless. I didn't know what to say. My sister was 30 when she passed away. And this was 13 or so years ago. My grandmother passed away from cancer. My other grandmother passed away from cancer. So immediately, that's where my head went. And thinking about my children and thinking about my family and thinking about my parents who have lost all their kids but me. And now I'm being diagnosed with cancer. Was referred to oncology. They walked to the oncology. You want to talk about really good healthcare? It's out of control. He walked to oncology clinic, put me in for a referral. That was on a Thursday. I got seen the following Monday. And that's where I met my oncologist, Dr. Gibson. He's in best in the market. He reassured me that this was a fight that was going to be tough to fight, but nonetheless, our goal is cure, not palliative care. And found out through more tests with him, it was the size of a cantaloupe. And my heart was on the wrong side of my chest. And my chief ended up meeting my doctor and asked my doctor, how would this have played out? And he said, she would have went into cardiac arrest and died any day.
Wow.
And there I was working out.
You used the word speechless earlier, and that I can't imagine what my reaction would be, but I would assume speechless is probably along those lines. And receiving that news, the emotions that you must go through. I mean, having received that news with my mom was already incredibly difficult. Then to have that be yourself, right, is crazy. Now, you know, you're on kind of the other side of the journey now where you are in remission, correct?
So remission, cured. I'll use the word cured. Yes, I wasn't as responsive as they wanted in the beginning. So they really took it to the next level. I tell him all the time, you tried to kill me. And he said, no. So yes, I'm on the other side of it. I went through six rounds of chemo. They were about 9 days long and 21-day cycles. Lost some hair. Got jacked up on steroids for a good 6 months. I gained a couple pounds with that. But now I'm on the other side and I'm trying to fight my way back. I am.
And that's it. When you shared all that with me before the podcast, that was the part that really just spoke to me. Is surviving cancer in and of itself is an amazing journey, an amazing story. But you survived and then said, I want to keep going with my military career. Like, I'm not done being in uniform serving, which again, to me is amazing. I want to dive in a little bit to back to when you got the diagnosis. Already incredibly difficult moments to go through. As a service member, you had the added difficulty that you now had to share this extremely personal and delicate piece of news with your leadership. How was that experience?
I was emotional. I came in the very next day after just finding out it was a mass. And I was sitting in Colonel Bassesi's office because my commander is a reservist and he is extremely available to me and he's wonderful. Shout out to him. But me being a full timer, I was here. I needed to work that day. But I knew immediately in that moment, one of my mentors is my MFM. He's Chief Master Sergeant Yaruso. And he will beat you down with this notion that when you need to take a knee, you need to take a knee. I took his advice and I told Colonel Bassesi what was going on and she sprang into action and it was very emotional for me. I'm not a very emotional person. Most people around this wing know me to be pretty stern, I guess you could say, stoic, not very emotional, but I was crying. I was scared and I'm not going to sit here and mesh words about it. And they received it and they made me feel as I was their top priority. They put in their actions and it wasn't all mouth that airmen come first. My chief, he came to sit in the hospital with me some days, called me every day, or I called him to harass him, either one. It was either way. But yeah, it was difficult. But the comfort that they made me feel is I can't put it into words.
And I just recently had the privilege to cover the ops group support for Master Sergeant Gonzalez. Jesse Gonzalez of the 356, his home was severely damaged by a fire, and the members of the ops community really lived that airman helping airman, the wingman concept. And to hear you now talk about how your wingman and leadership rallied to you in your moment of need is, I keep hearing people mention like that's what makes the 433rd special, and I've been here only about a year now, a little more than a year, and I keep seeing it time and time again. So I think if you hear it once or twice, maybe it's a coincidence, but multiple people time and time again consistently noting it, I am beginning to feel it's one of the things that makes the 433rd special is that family, that sense of family. Highlighting that support from your leadership, was that part of your encouragement to keep going after you made it to remission and you made it to the cured side? You took that choice to stay serving. Was the support part of that decision?
Absolutely. There's a multitude of reasons why I decided to stay serving. The biggest thing that stands out to me was giving back what I got. The care that I got from my leadership, from my peers, from my troops, their get well messages, their prayers. And I mean that truly. I don't mean that because we often superficially say, you're in my thoughts, you're in my prayers. But there are people here that were on their knees praying for me. Everything that they gave to me, my providers, Dr. Gibson, his entire team, who gave me red carpet service, no matter what, they were a text away, they were a call away. All of these are product of what the military had to offer me. So I'm going to keep serving as long as I'm permitted to. They'll never know. I told my doctor a while back, I said, you'll meet a million people and they will, there's just so many to keep up with, but you'll be one of the most significant people that ever enter into someone's lives just because of the nature of what he does. And it's the same thing when it comes to my commander and my leadership and my troops. They'll never know the significance of what they were to me during that difficult time. So that was the most important thing for me to keep serving. Next thing is my children. I want my children to see that this doesn't, if God was given you the gift to keep moving, then you keep moving. You don't step out of the game. You keep moving. That's what life's about. But most of all, the reason, not most of all, but lastly, the reason why is because I want to make everybody proud. There's thanks. There's resiliency part of it. But I also want to make everybody proud. So I'm not too old for that.
You mentioned resiliency as part of your response there. And I can only imagine the difficult lessons you have learned in this fight about resiliency. Could you share some of the ones that come to your mind right away for other airmen who are dealing with all range of difficult situations?
I'd love to. The most important part of resiliency for me is to have a relationship with Jesus Christ and a devout relationship. So much so that me being cured from cancer is almost negligible compared to what God has done to my life. No knock against girl bossing and all those cute terms we use these days. I think that's great if that's what you want to label it. The fact of the matter is every strength I got was from my relationship with God. He's changed my life significantly, and I rededicated my life to him through this process, and it's made me want to be more devout to him, to my family, to this job, and to have as much vigor as I had day one as I'm going to have at the end of this, in the end of my career. And for anyone else who's facing this battle, first seek God. There's a verse in Romans that says suffering produces endurance. And it's the truth. There's so many problems out there that are way worse than cancer. There is. There's heart problems. Because, hey, that's how mine would have played out and I would have died. There are people like your mom who's gone to heaven. And there's the casualty of that that's left here. And seeking God and knowing that he's going to be with us and get us through every single step of the way is what's going to keep us in the fight. And I encourage anyone who is going through something to do that.
In these types of moments, yeah, you absolutely need a strength beyond, you know, what I would describe as humanly possible. And faith is the place to turn. I would definitely agree with that. I think you mentioned something there of that I guess I would label as perspective. This fight has given you new perspective. Again, for others who are fighting different battles, what part of your perspective would you share with them to help them in whatever they're struggling with?
When my sister was diagnosed with cancer, she fought for 2 years. And when she went to go get her, she had a very rare form of cancer. It was a liver cancer. When she went to go get her second liver transplant, it was supposed to be several hours. She was supposed to be in the operating room. And when she came out in record time, I'll surmise the conversation. The doctor said, hey, we weren't able to do it. And she said, it's no good, huh? And the doctor said, no. And she asked how long she had. And the doctor told her a couple months, something in that ballpark. And the first thing out of her mouth was, God doesn't make any mistakes. He is good. And this was a dying woman. So my perspective is, as I said before, we put God first. And my next perspective is give it everything you have. This place I'll call the 433rd, which I love, it can become difficult some days and it can become mundane some days, but we have to give it what we, everything, give our family everything, give our God everything first. That's my perspective. I know there are tough things going on in this world, mental illnesses and everything. And I know some days it's hard to get up and fight, but you got to fight because it doesn't stop. It doesn't.
Absolutely. And with the geopolitical situation, to use a really broad blanket term, every day can go from absolutely mundane, any day could go from absolutely mundane to the worst day of your life, depending on what is going on in the world and the various contingencies and missions and situations that the 433rd could be called to respond. So I think that is a great mindset that you've honed now that you've gone through your own personal struggle, is that every day requires 100%. Even though some days you don't even want to give it 10. So I think that's powerful. I think our audience would probably want to know what's next on this journey for you.
If my medical team and the Air Force Surgeon General sees it fit, I'd like to find the next opportunity for me. And I don't know what that looks like. I'm fighting for my health. I'm proud to say that I'm up to lifting weights four to five times a week. Extremely heavy, by the way. I was leg pressing almost 415. That's a lot. And then I'm curling 20 pounds. When I came out of chemo, I could only curl 10 pounds. And I'm up to about 4 to 5 miles a day. It dropped a little bit. I was aiming for 5 to 6, but I'm about 4 to 5 miles a day. I ran twice this weekend. Those are my first immediate steps, is to get my health back and to fight for that, get some of this steroid weight off. And then my next step in the military is to take whatever opportunity that comes my way. I want to apply for jobs. I have to get cleared. And I understand that's a process and that's okay. I'll be patient through it. But yeah, I would love an opportunity. I had to turn down a couple opportunities whenever I'd put in for a chief job. And the day I was diagnosed, which was October the 31st, I had to rescind my application. A job that I think I was pretty marketable for, but that's okay. That is okay. I'll fight it. I'll get back and I'll get back in the game.
Two reactions to that. Number one, as someone who has not gone through cancer, I am not leg pressing 415 pounds. So that is major kudos to you.
Thank you.
And second, I think there's that old, I'm a guy who likes adages and cliches, right? It just makes things easier to remember. It's not about how many times you get knocked down. It's about how many times you get back up again, right?
And yes, sir.
I think you've managed to really demonstrate that with your experience, that hey, the punches keep coming, but you just decide to keep getting back on. Senior Master Sergeant Catherine Falcone, thank you for sharing your powerful story. I think a story as much as it was about challenges, it's also about the positivity. And I hope that the positivity that I'm feeling being in this room with you is contagious and passes on to our listeners through whatever medium they listen to us through.
Thank you.
Some announcements before we go. The public affairs team will be taking the official wing and group photo this UTA. All personnel are required to report to Spot 8 on the flight line by 12:45 on Sunday. The Rising 6 Council is hosting its semi-annual NCO induction ceremony Saturday at 1500 at the Fingston Reception Center. Inductees are required to wear blues. All others attending can wear the uniform of the day. That's going to do it for this episode of Ready, Set, Airlift. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen to us on. It helps us know if you, our listeners, are enjoying the content. You can also leave us a review. I've been your host, Julian Hernandez. Until next time, take care and have a good UTA.